you're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Wake up! Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
But since you've been gone,
just watching the tape, Taylor, really good edge guy in terms of the sack. He's had good sack production. We feel good about that. I think he brings a different skill set than we have out there.
I'm just excited to be here.
Williams I had in Indianapolis, and he's done a really good job of refining his skill set and his pass rush.
I was ecstatic, like, ready to go. Like, I was like, honestly, like, let's get it.
The ground is short. This could be two. One at second. And a double play turn. And that'll be your ball game. The White Sox have lost 100 games before the start of September.
The pitch. And a high fly ball, shallow right. Drifting back the second baseman, Lopez. And he makes the catch, crossing over into foul territory for out number three. Miami avoids the sweep as the Marlins beat the Cubs 7-2.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Happy Monday, guys.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Wow. It's August 26th, and the Sox are already in the books. Stand up and out, oh boy.
Morning, Mully. Yeah. Monday, we want to start with the Sox. We are at the lowest point in White Sox history as we sit here this morning. And that's no exaggeration.
But it's not even, like, it's going to get worse.
Well, I know.
Don't we,
are well,
we
tomorrow
confident?
It could be an opportunity to say that again. But never before have they had back-to-back 100 loss seasons.
No.
So what they did yesterday made history.
Right.
News, yes. Tiresome news,
yes.
Absolutely.
Predictable.
And yeah. It's only August 26th. You wonder how low they can go. And there's no end in sight this season. There's some glimmers of hope along the way. But, boy, that was rough because they couldn't even win a game in the series.
No.
But I think we talked about that on Friday morning. They didn't give us any reason to think they would win a game.
No.
And they didn't.
No. I thought it was neat / cute that they were wearing Grady Sizemore t-shirts.
That was Friday before the game. Yeah, I thought it was a sign of respect. He's in a difficult spot, and he's connecting in some ways with players. They respect a player who has a manager who has played the game before.
Right.
And Grady Sizemore is he's got an opportunity, but I don't know if he can do much with it. Just because the talent is so bad.
The Cubs lost yesterday. Boy, have we seen that game before. My goodness gracious. It just feels like every time you get going, there's kind of this stall in the engine. So you think they're putting it together and they're getting ready for a sweep, but nope, it's this Cubs season, and they gave one away. And I mean, they got beaten. They stopped playing on offense yet again. I guess that's my
complaint. They score 14 runs on Saturday, and then they have bats that are silent on Sunday, and it makes no sense. And it just underscores how inconsistent they have been and why you have no reason to believe that they're going to get on the run that they need to get on. Even though it's mathematically possible, even though they have a break in the schedule. I loved the exchange yesterday before the game, Craig Counsell. And Sully, the idea that there's a break in the schedule coming up with the final 31 games. And Council pointing out, again, it's difficult to play these teams. It's Major League Baseball. Even though the records are what they are, the Cubs aren't good enough to assume anything offensively.
Right.
So here we are waiting for that 8-game winning streak.
That's the thing that is so embittering. It's very difficult to get on a long winning streak when you can't score runs.
And they go into Pittsburgh against some of those young arms. Exactly. They're going to see Paul Skeens during this series.
Ouch.
That doesn't make you feel like a 6-game winning streak, a 4-game winning streak is in the offing. So, yeah, it's frustrating. They should have beaten the Marlins, the worst team in the National League. The only team worse than the Marlins, the White Sox.
But there is good news. We have good news in town. We got the Bears trying to get better. We got the Bears wheeling and dealing after their preseason ends.
You like to see that. The news started Friday when they made the deal for the pass rusher from the Seahawks. They go out and they get somebody in Darryl Taylor that has a history of being a good pass rusher in a 4-3 defense, was kind of miscast in what the Seahawks are going to run. So now he can put his hand in the dirt, as they say, rush the passer. And Ryan Poles saw that as a need. We talked about it all off season. Now they have their answer.
Well, they have an answer, and they also added Chris Williams, who they had once drafted in Chicago years ago.
That's
a different Chris.
This is the third iteration of the Chris Williams experiment. Yes. One was a cornerback that was torched in a playoff game against the Panthers.
That's right.
Circa 2005. Steve Smith will remember that one well. Then there was the pre-injured first-round draft pick from Vanderbilt, the offensive tackle that lasted about 3 practices before he was put on the injured list. So let's hope this experiment with Chris Williams goes better than those did.
But you needed help at the defensive tackle position.
Yes.
And they didn't give up a ton. They gave up a 6th-round pick that they had left over from that Chase Claypool deal, and they got a 7th-round pick back.
It's a pick swap.
Yeah.
And let's face it, there was no guarantee that Chris Williams was going to make the Browns roster.
Sure.
So what they did was, this was kind of a preemptive strike.
Yeah.
You swap picks and positions, and you get a guy who has experience in Matt Eberflus's defense, having played for him in Indianapolis with the Colts. They like his motor, as they say.
Right.
And he's a guy that, as we looked at, you know, the roster all preseason, you wondered about the depth of the defensive tackle position. Now they have addressed that. So they have a pass rusher who is going to be a probably situational, rotational guy in Taylor, and they have a defensive tackle. They got older, and they got better.
Yeah. I don't know that they're done. Maybe they're done. We'll get into that. We'll talk about it. There are other ideas that are floating around out there. We'll get into all of that as we move forward. But I would say that the Bears are staring down the cuts. They started doing some cuts, but they haven't really jumped in as much as other teams have. They have until 4 o'clock tomorrow to make their decisions, 3 Chicago time, 4 Eastern, to make their decisions on the 53-man roster. And really, in previous seasons, they've cut further and waited to see who opened up. I don't think they're in that situation, but it'll be very curious, David, to see. And I think we're missing like a huge piece of information in order to evaluate exactly what they're going to do. And that, of course, is the health of a lot of these players, who's up and running and ready to go, and who might have an injury that will take a week or two. We don't know.
Yeah, the only area that probably has any significant impact would be the offensive line.
Definitely the offensive.
Yeah, I think you're talking about Ryan Bates, possibly. Yeah. What is his status and how badly injured is he? They haven't had to share all that yet, but I don't think beyond that there's too much suspense in terms of who's going to make the team, who isn't going to make the team, that would affect the overall course of the season or the record. And the offensive line could be an issue. Beyond that, the amount of time we spend breaking down and wondering about the last 5 or 6 spots on an NFL roster, it's in a football city like Chicago, you understand it because the Bears are a story every day of the year. But the Bears aren't going to. The difference between 10-7, 9-8, and you know 6-11 isn't whether or not they keep Bayless Jones.
No question about that. But I do think that when there are kind of mystery injuries, that does impact the numbers. So a guy like Bayless Jones had a great game, had a great finish to his game. It was curious that he was in that position, but he did do well in the final preseason game. You could argue that the element that he brings, the most crucial element, obviously speed and speed kills, and he flashed that speed. So people would sit up and take notice of that. Now, you know, we had talked about this before, that you felt that making a football team doesn't come down to whether or not you can flash in the final quarter against, you know, whatever is left on a roster for another team. But he did show something, and he showed what the skill is that it led him to the NFL and why there is interest in him if indeed he is not on this roster. He looks like the kind of guy that will stick in the league based on that speed, whether it be on a practice squad, on a roster. You know, again, we can pick that apart. It's fun to talk about because it is, you know, I remember talking to a buddy of mine who played college football, and there was one guy from his entire team that actually got an invite to an NFL camp, and it was the guy that ran the 4.3 40. The guy couldn't play dead, but man, was he fast.
Yeah, I think that beyond the speed, I think he showed pretty good instincts running the ball and cutting back, and he is learning a new position. The rule is that you're not going to make a team based on what you do in the fourth quarter of your final exhibition game.
Right.
The exception might be a guy who's changing positions who gives you something to think about. And on a team that doesn't really have one of those necessarily, they can always use somebody like that who might have another purpose. And so if he's a kick returner and a hybrid slot guy who can come out of the backfield and exploit a mismatch, he might be worth keeping more so than somebody else at that position. Also, you have to consider the rookie Wheeler is now on injured reserve. The Bears placed three players on injured reserve Friday, which wasn't a good outcome for the final preseason game. And that's unfortunate for all of them, all of those players, because that's the last thing you want to happen in the final preseason game. And they had three injured reserve players on Friday.
Yeah, not starters, not guys that that maybe you're relying upon to, as you say, win in the 2024 version of this season. Nonetheless, you just want to come out clean. That's what you hope for. And we'll see. We'll see. Larry Borum, he wasn't put on injured reserve, but he left on a cart. Right?
I'm curious what his status is. I don't think we heard anything over the weekend.
Right.
That is a key role on an offensive line where you know attrition's going to hit. So
it
looked bad getting rolled up from behind.
My fault. I should have been more aware of it, but I guess he hit an escalator in his contract. He's making more than $3 million.
Well, we talked about that on Friday.
Yeah, it's hard to make a team. It's really hard to make a team if you're a reserve making over $3
million. Yeah, that could factor into their decision because they can afford it, but do they need to? Right. And is he worth that kind of money? He's got a contract that was structured in a way that really incentivized him to make this team this season. So that was bad timing for Larry Borum because if he's healthy, I think he makes the team and they pay him the money because they don't really have a lot of depth at that position. Pryor, I think, is a swing guy. They have some other options.
The thing about Borum is he can play inside and outside.
And he has experience.
That's it.
Yeah.
He's played guard. He's played tackle. You would think that would come into play.
You tend to value guys like that. Yeah. So on Friday, the Bears placed Ian Wheeler, Simba Webster, and Douglas Coleman III, the young man who was carted off. And so those three players are out for the season. That's a rule I really think that the NFL should really look at. I know they have adjusted it, but why do you have to make a decision and a determination in August that if one injury is going to cost the guy a roster spot all year long?
Yeah, well, I you can bring guys back off injured reserve, right? So you could conceivably bring one of those guys back if you came up short and they were to heal.
I think if you designate them a certain way, though, you're not bringing them back.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't think any of those guys are going to make the team. Simba Webster is one guy that's been around here a while, but I don't know that he was going to make the 53. Maybe there's a, you know, the taxi squad has expanded. I think it's 17.
16
now.
Practice squad players.
Yeah, yeah, there's a lot.
You can call them up and back. It's going to affect maybe their decision at quarterback.
Right.
But I do think it's odd sometimes you still have to make a call on a guy.
How
if injured reserve, you're basically eliminating their chance to come back this season in some cases in August.
How do you feel it'll impact the quarterback decision? They're keeping two quarterbacks, right?
Well, they're keeping two quarterbacks on the 53. What it would be is if you expose Brett Rypien to the practice squad, you have the ability to bring him up every week without – it's a kind of an exemption. They started that last year, the emergency quarterback. Right. If you do that, then you can conceivably – feel better about your depth of the position.
Are they likely to do that?
I think it depends on other roster decisions. But if you do that, you also expose Brett Rypien to a weekly poach. You could have somebody who has an injury at another, you know, a quarterback, and they know him or there's a familiarity, and they'll go back and they could sign him to the 53-man roster. Another team could, as he remains on the practice squad. So you can stash him there. Bring him up every Sunday, but you do run the risk of having him exposed to other teams claiming him.
How many different coordinators has he been in their system for 25 days?
You know, you wonder.
25 days plus.
The Rams probably, you know, the Rams probably one of those teams. He was in with the Jets for a while. Had to look. Broncos.
I watched the Broncos Seahawks yesterday. Did I see Zach Wilson at one point? Is that what I saw?
I think he's the backup in Denver.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I think he was beaten out by Bo Nix.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of preseason football on over the weekend. Last night, the Patriots, I think, gave Drake May a pretty good platform after Jacoby Brissett went down. And Drake May could be the fourth rookie starter in week one. Now, Brissett has an injury. They say he could be okay. But depending on what they want to do in New England, we could be looking at four week one rookie starters, which is remarkable. But it's also a sign of the times because you got Bo Nix, won the job in Denver. You've got, obviously, Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. And then Drake May could be the fourth.
Wow. Yeah, Michael Penix not playing, and of course
McCarthy's hurt.
Injured.
Michael Penix not scheduled to play. You wonder.
Until they didn't play in the preseason. Is all I meant.
Yeah, until Kirk Cousins proves he can come back and
be healthy.
That's a pretty serious injury he's recovering from at his stage of his career. Same with Aaron Rodgers. So there are big questions about those two guys, those two veterans. And
is Kirk rehabbing on Tuesday, or is that still?
I think he probably needs to rehab on Tuesday. He can't take Tuesdays off when you're that age with that injury.
That's just a joke.
Yeah,
he was on that quarterback thing, and that was the shock. The only thing I really learned was that the guy apparently doesn't practice on, or doesn't do anything on Tuesday. Tuesday's family day.
That is.
Which is a very unusual thing for an NFL quarterback.
Very difficult to do that, I think, and play quarterback well, but he has done that consistently, so maybe it works for him. Maybe it's good for him. I don't know.
I watched a little bit of the Steelers game. I guess, you know, and I know we don't care about this other than it could impact a draft pick. But did you see that Russ and Justin Fields have virtually the same numbers? Like, it's hysterical. Their numbers are identical by the end of the preseason.
Yeah, they are. And I don't think that in either case, you name Russell Wilson, you name Justin Fields. In either case, I don't think Mike Tomlin is going to excite the masses.
Scratch it in pencil.
It's not. There are going to be changes. It looks like based on their preseason, there are going to be struggles.
Oh, boy.
And that team could be in one of the tougher divisions in football, the bottom, the bottom of that division. You look at, are they better than the Ravens? No. Are they better than the Bengals? No. Are they better than the Browns? I don't think so. So the Steelers could be in for a long season.
Some close finishes over the weekend. I saw the Little League World Series. I don't watch it, but I just noticed that it was won in extra innings by the team from Florida. First time a Florida team's won.
Terrible ending to that game. You feel terrible for those kids every time. It looks like there was a bunt. Nobody was covering first, and it was an error, and it just, you feel bad for those kids. But, yeah, it was an exciting finish.
We had a college football game, Georgia Tech, with the 24-21 victory over Florida State. And that was in Dublin, Ireland. And obviously the college slate opens this weekend in full, but a walk-off 44-yard field goal settled that one.
That was a surprise. Florida State was ranked. Georgia Tech was not. It's a long way to go for a football game if you're in the ACC, but they delivered some drama for people that were paying attention. I don't have any real sympathy for Florida State.
And the Chicago Sky lost to the Aces on a – it was like just over a second left, and they somehow inbounded the ball, and Asia Wilson made a layup.
Saw that, yeah. Lost at the buzzer. Buzzer beater.
Yeah.
Angel Reese had 20 rebounds again.
22. Yeah.
Yeah, third game in a row she's got 20 or more.
Yeah.
She's a rebounding machine.
She's unbelievable.
She is. Yeah, so that wasn't enough, though. They lost – to Asia Wilson, who, that's Becky Hammon's team, right? So she drew up the play, worked out well for them, and the Sky lose a close game. I think that was that a home game? A lot of activity in the city, a lot of stuff going on.
There was so much going on in the city, it was crazy.
It's crazy. Had a triathlon yesterday.
Was there a concert over the weekend?
Because Pink
and
Sheryl Crow.
I saw a lot of bottles in the parking lot, that's usually in the parking garage.
And Luke Bryan at Wrigley Field. Yeah, a lot of stuff going on. After the DNC cleared out, there's still activity. It is Chicago.
Yes.
It's August. It's summer.
A lot going on. It's the end of August. It's the end of summer, right? Don't we start? I mean, pretty much some kids start today,
school's back for a lot of kids in the suburbs. Yep. I think CPS next week. Yeah, basically, this is the last week of summer, unofficially, because Labor Day.
Labor Day is Monday, week from today.
Baseball season still has another month to go. That's a threat for Sox fans, more than a promise.
Yeah, I mean, technically, it gives them more time to somehow not set the record, but they are going to.
They're on their way. They're on their way.
Say it with me. Southside, stand up.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. They're not going to be standing too many more times in the end of the season. No, before
it came very close to going to the game yesterday.
Eesh.
Came very close.
So today, they're home. Tigers. Wraparound.
Are the Tigers still here?
The wraparound series.
Why won't the Tigers leave? At what point can we get them out?
Why would they want to leave? They keep facing the White Sox.
Have they relocated? They've been here for like 6 weeks. Doesn't it feel that way?
Javi Baez feels like he's playing in Chicago again. Yeah, it's
how
been
long
a
have
long
they been
series.
Here? They were on the north side, and then they went to the south side. And
they had a 3-game series with the Cubs Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
And this is a 4-game series?
And it's a wraparound series. I love the wraparound series. It's kind of weird.
Is that they score a goal that way?
No, it's just a wraparound, the weekend wraparound, Monday. It's too much. Too many Tigers.
They've been here too long. You can go home now.
They're registered to vote. Twice.
Go back to Detroit and eat your square pizza. Leave us be.
But I don't think they want to leave.
No, I don't blame them.
The White Sox gave them a game yesterday. Jonathan Cannon good for a while. Yeah. But we talked to Chris Getz Saturday and inside the clubhouse, and I found him remarkably
composed,
optimistic about the future because of the young pitching. And we'll get to it, but Hagen Smith, that was before the debut. He made his professional debut at single A. Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of wow there. And how about
Cam? High A. He went Winston-Salem.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Low A. Single A.
It's
single
A.
It's impressive. He was definitely effortless and impressive. And how about the Cubs' first-round draft pick?
Yes.
Cam Smith has hit a home run in six straight games.
He just hit another one.
give him a ticket to South Bend. Now, that's high A.
That's high A.
Yeah.
High A. Don't forget, you gotta say hi.
When the best news is at the minor league level, and we're talking about Class A developments over the weekend, you know it's been a tough Sunday for Chicago baseball.
The Cubs can score runs in the lower levels, and the White Sox can get good pitching. High A. High A.
Yeah, they did. They can.
Salem. He dashed off a great game for himself. All right, we got a lot to get to. We've got the pick six next. We're going to tear it all apart. We'll have some fun with that. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
It's picks. From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Pick Six, sponsored by Affinity Whole Health. Do what I do. Visit FeelGreatIllinois.com to learn more about their testosterone therapy or their weight loss options. Are the Bears a better team after trading a six-rounder to the Seahawks for defensive end Daryl Taylor and a six-rounder to the Browns for defensive tackle Chris Williams and a seventh-rounder in return? Can you share who you believe will lead the team in sacks this year, not named Montez Sweat? Are they done acquiring defensive linemen, or could there be another move left?
Oh, there could be another move left. I mean, who knows? It is a difficult. I don't think they're done with anything. I don't expect them to make another move. I don't think they're going to sign Yannick Ngakoue, if that's what the question is. But I do believe that that when you look at Daryl Taylor, he's done pretty well for himself. He's gotten some sacks in the NFL. That is a good quality to have in a defensive lineman. Chris Williams seems like a depth piece to me. Seems like they, you know, we kind of talked about the idea that outside of Andrew Billings, they didn't seem to have another guy, kind of the size of him that could kind of step in. I'm not saying that Williams is that guy, but he's a defensive tackle. So it's more depth at that position, especially with Zach Pickens injured. We'll figure out the extent of that as we move forward. But I think it's going to be kind of pass rusher by committee on the other side. And I'm going to go with Austin Booker flashing enough to be the maybe get 4 or 5 sacks. I would imagine that Daryl Taylor could do that as well. But I would say I'm going to go with Booker picking up some sacks based on that spin move from the preseason game. That was awesome.
I like that idea, but I mean, if it's only 4 or 5, if the second leading sacker on the Bears is 4 or 5, unless there's like 4 guys with 5, it's going to be, that'd be disappointing. I don't think that would be getting the job done. Now, based on the fact that they've added depth at that edge rush spot, I'm actually changing my answer. When we talked about this before, it was DeMarcus Walker, because I thought he'd get enough reps, enough tries. But now with this addition, I think his attempts, snaps, goes down. I'm going to say these guys push the quarterback up into the pocket. And I'm going to go with like Javon Dexter with like 8.5 or 9.
Oh, that's a good
number. Kind of running into something.
That's a healthy number.
Right? Yeah. That's what I'm going to go. Because I think he's going to be in there quite a bit because they do lack some depth. So
yeah,
I'm going Dexter.
That's a good number. That'd be a great season for Javon Dexter if he has 9 sacks. You wonder about Daryl Taylor. This is a good move for the Bears because it gets a guy who was miscast in the scheme. Mike McDonald brings 3-4 scheme to Seattle. He didn't fit any longer, so he comes to the Bears where he can more naturally rush the passer from the edge. You wonder about a guy. He's had 21.5 sacks the last 3 seasons. He topped out at 9.5. This is a good move, and he's a move. This fits age-wise into the window of the other Bears players that they believe might be core pieces. I don't think Dustin, this will affect so much DeMarcus Walker, except for on nickel downs, passing downs, he'll move inside. And DeMarcus Walker will still be on the field when they're in pass rush situations. Be able to maybe use that quickness to get to the quarterback. Maybe that's a better place to start inside for DeMarcus Walker. I think he will be the second highest, given the Bears the second highest sack total. I think Booker is a good one. I think Taylor is a good one. They're going to spread things around. Don't be surprised, and I wouldn't be shocked, if we end up with a guy like Kyler Gordon with 7 sacks or 6 sacks from the secondary, blitzing on those nickel situations, if Lucy is as aggressive as he has been in the preseason, and if the Bears have as many leads as we think they might, they could come after the quarterback from the secondary, and you might have a secondary player like Gordon be second in sacks. If Montez Sweat doesn't have double-digit sacks, though, everyone's going to be wondering why.
That's a really good question.
That's the voice of Ross Tucker. He's here at 8 this morning. The Bears began cutting down the roster over the weekend with more moves expected necessary until the Tuesday 3 p.m. deadline. Any moves surprise you so far, and what will be the biggest name on the Bears' cut?
I don't think I've been surprised yet. I don't think that there's been a big name. Maybe mildly the Illinois defensive tackle, the undrafted defensive tackle, Keith Randall, was a guy that they deemed expendable after trading for Chris Williams from the Browns via the Colts, and all the, his background with Flus makes him maybe a more trusted option right now than an undrafted free agent. Maybe Randall can be on the practice squad. There's 16 jobs there. So a lot of these moves that are made, maybe they wanted to give him a chance to survey the league to see if he could fit on another roster. I don't know if there are going to be any big names per se. If you want to call Velus Jones a big name, he's the one most likely to raise an eyebrow. He's the one most likely to create some conversation because he was the first offensive player drafted by Ryan Poles. I think he might make the team. We'll talk about that. I think he's probably a guy that you could understand why they would keep. If you're looking for somebody who would be the biggest name, it might be Brett Rypien because he's a veteran. I don't think he makes the 53, but I think he'll probably try to latch onto the practice squad much in the way that Nathan Peterman did and then be up every Sunday as that emergency third quarterback.
Big name. I think you guys were onto something when you mentioned Larry Borum and the salary, but I guess the question would be, is he injured? So is that you can't cut a guy, you can't cut an injured player. So would he be a guy that you could potentially put on some type of a list, or would they negotiate something like a medical settlement to get him out the door? But I'm saying from a name standpoint, or a guy on the depth chart that is a snap away from being a big contributor to your team. I think it's Larry Borum. I'm not surprised by any of the moves so far. Obviously, I think it's all about the, to me, I have a lot of offensive line questions and who are going to be the depth pieces. And you know, as much as we've, and for good reason, don't get me wrong, as much as we've had plenty to say about Nate Davis, right? So he's finally back out there. David won his coffee bet the other day because Nate Davis didn't take a snap in the preseason game. Thanks a lot, Bears. Appreciate that. But I mean, what's going on with the other guard in the tackle and the center? You know, what is going on with Ryan Bates? And how is that going to play out? Like, I'm just curious, like, how many guys are going to have to keep around because guys are hurt. So I'm curious to see the final numbers on the offensive line. Who are the, I guess, eight guys, right? You probably have to keep eight guys on the offensive line. Who are those eight?
Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting question, Dustino. They might have to keep 10 going into the first cut. This is the problem because of the uncertainty about injuries and who's available and who isn't. You know, they may, because it would appear that Kieran Amagaji is not ready to play. And I don't know if he'll be ready to play to start the season. He's on the roster. They're not going to not cut him, but maybe he's a guy that they don't have active or come back with. You know, to me, the biggest name to be cut would be, and I don't know how big it is, like if it's Velus Jones or Dante Pettis, or as you mentioned, Larry Borum. Those were kind of anybody, I suppose, that came here and played a little bit or had higher expectations. But I don't think I'd be stunned by, you know, any move they might make. You know, I suppose if they cut someone like Noah Sewell, who was a draft pick linebacker, and I'm not saying they're going to. I'm just saying that's a name.
He might have a hard time making the team.
That would kind of surprise me if that happened, just because there are guys that they drafted. But no, I don't think I don't think they're going to make any kind of surprise move like that.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. Biggs time, 7 a.m. What did you make of the Cubs' Sunday falter in Miami?
We had a bad day offensively. I mean, we didn't do much. You know, Aller kind of just beat us a little bit with the fastball. Some, you know, got it by us, or kind of weak balls in the air. You know, we didn't miss out on anything with hard hit balls today. They just kind of beat us with the fastball and just didn't have a good day with an offense at all.
Okay, Craig. Why can't the Cubs sweep the bad teams? Will that change in Pittsburgh? Can you believe that was the 42nd time the Cubs have scored three or fewer runs this season?
Boy, that seems like a lot. And it seems like that's the reason. To answer the question, it's found in that question. The very fact that they can't seem to score runs on a regular basis. The fact that they've gone so many games with not scoring enough runs, and I believe they're like 3-39 in those games. I mean, that's insane. You know, they have you thought they'd have more than that, and it hasn't been the case. And that's the answer to the question. Listen, you know, we know what the back end of the bullpen has looked like and the problems they've had, and frankly, both those things were exercised yesterday. Not only did they not score enough runs, but that game was what, 3-1, and all of a sudden you thought, well, they got three outs left, they just got to get to the ninth inning, and then you give up four runs, and that was just mind-boggling. That was terrible. Julian Merriweather did not have his act together in that game, and that just ended any kind of threat. As it turned out, they wound up scoring a meaningless run in their portion of the ninth. But the answer to the question and the reason is the offense. They have not been able to score runs consistently, and I would imagine that's going to continue for the reason that David mentioned in the first segment. I believe they have Paul Skenes on Wednesday, and I think that momentum is the next day starting pitcher. As you heard from Craig Counsell there, they just couldn't get their bat on the ball, and they got stymied by a pitcher, and that's kind of the answer to the question.
Well, they especially can't get the bat on the ball, Molly, when there's a runner in scoring position. Just 2-for-12 Sunday afternoon with runners in scoring position. I mean, they make this Aller kid look like Cy Young. I mean, this is a guy that's up and down and been all over the place. He goes 5 2/3 innings. He strikes 6 Cubs out. Walks 2 guys. They can't capitalize on the walks. Julian Merriweather, who I thought was going to be like a nice addition, basically you haven't had him all season, he's been awful. He has not been good at all. And it's really, really disappointing to see that. And I want to believe the Cubs are going to win 2 out of 3 coming up against Pitchburg, but the pitching matchups, really don't favor the Cubs, especially with Skeens going on Wednesday afternoon. It's going to be like a 11:35 first pitch on Wednesday afternoon. So they got to at least win the series. I mean, of course, they're still mathematically alive, but you guys have said it before. Coomer's told you guys they need a 9 or 10 game winning streak, and this would be the time to try to get that done.
Bad loss Sunday. Ian Happ has two doubles, including one to lead off the game. They can't bring him home. Nobody else really picked up the slack offensively. He had 3 of their 6 hits.
Right.
Bottom of the lineup, you figured they were going to be pretty good with Pete Crow Armstrong had a very productive weekend in Miami. 14 seconds around the bases the other night. That was something. That was exciting. And PCA was 0-4. And then Bethancourt, you think he's the guy who drove in their only run. He's been red hot when he plays. They've been getting great production out of the catching position. You see the Cubs lead the majors in catchers OPS in the month of August. That's crazy. But they can't get key hits when they need them. That was the story yesterday. And they did make the struggling Marlins pitcher, Aller, look like he had more than one victory of the season. Yesterday was his first. And Javi Assad went 7 innings. I was surprised that was his highest, longest outing of the season. Again, this is a pet peeve. 3 runs in 7 innings is work. You can win with that, I guess, if you get an offensive team performance that is acceptable. But the story coming out of that game wasn't that Javier Assad gave them a great outing. And
that counted as a quality start, right?
It did, under those terms.
But oh, by the way,
he gave up 2 home runs
in the first inning.
That's why. Yeah.
And the headline on Cubs.com, I love him, but you know, Assad regroups after first, delivers season high 7 innings. No, that's not the takeaway. The takeaway is the Cubs can't hit when they need to hit. They needed a sweep yesterday. They have to settle for 2 out of 3. They now need to go into Pittsburgh and beat Paul Skeens and the other pitchers that they have, and it's not likely to happen. Ugh.
What was the other part of that question?
That is the voice of John Heyman, 825, a trip around the bases with him. How did you celebrate the White Sox suffering their 100th loss season in franchise history? Any chance this woeful team wins 12 of the next 31 to avoid tying the Mets with 120 losses? With consecutive seasons of 100 losses, how long will this streak last?
I don't think it's conceivable that they can win 12 of the next 31 at all. This is going to be harder to win and to sustain interest and intensity and enthusiasm. This next month is going to feel like a season in itself for the White Sox players and staff. And maybe even fans, if anyone's still paying attention. This is difficult. And they don't have anywhere to go but down. And we said this morning, this is the low point in White Sox history. Because this is the first day that we woke up and they have back-to-back 100 lost seasons. It's never happened before. And it's only going to get worse before it gets better. When will it start to get better? Maybe the offseason. Chris Getz sure sounded optimistic on Saturday morning, and I understand the reason why. Jonathan Cannon started okay yesterday. Texter says, well, boy, that's a low bar. Yeah. Have you seen what the White Sox are working with? Jonathan Cannon's first few innings, his breaking ball was moving. He was doing the things that you want to do and see from a young pitcher. Then he ran out of gas. This is a team where there are a lot of problems. You know, friends and relatives are basically at the game on a beautiful Sunday on the south side. Attendance was down. The Tigers look like a team that, they don't want to leave Chicago. Why would they? They keep playing the White Sox. So I think that they're staring at more history, more bad history, and this is going to be the next month or so documenting the worst team that we've ever seen in one season in the majors.
Yeah, I think they are going to push that 120 losses up to about 123 when it's all said and done. I didn't celebrate it, believe it or not. I didn't even have the heart. I have a buddy, good Sox fan buddy. We always text, especially during the Cubs Sox series, and make some kind of wagers. This year, he wouldn't even allow me to have the wins that the Cubs did get, so I didn't bother to give him any crud via the texting back and forth. But it's too bad. I mean, nobody's there. That's fine. I mean, it was hot. I get it. If there was no, like, will anybody be there tonight in all seriousness? Like, I mean, nobody was there yesterday, and it was a nice day to be outside if you kept yourself hydrated.
And it's a school night. CPS does start today, not next week.
Yeah, CPS starts. So, I mean, I don't see there being anybody there. And guess what? I can't blame you for why would you go out there today to see the Tigers? I understand coming to see the Cubs and the Yankees, but why would you come see the Tigers?
Any chance this team wins 12 of their next 31, I would wager they can't win half of that. I would bet by the time this thing's done, they'll have five. They'll win five games the rest of the way. I do not believe they can win 12. I certainly don't believe they can win six.
So you have them at 126 losses.
That's what it looks like to me now.
They're definitely capable of doing that.
And I think that if that is the case, I don't see what moves they can make, what trades they can make. They're getting rid of people still. I do not believe there's a chance that they don't lose 100 games next year. I think that they're going for a three-peat of the 100 loss. I think this will be the worst one, but I think they'll lose over 100 games for a third straight season. How are they not going to lose over 100 games for the third straight season? They're going to get rid of Garrett Crochet, most likely Luis Robert, and who's coming up? They're not even bringing up what a guy we've been waiting on, who's been striking out in AAA, Colson Montgomery. They're not going to bring him up in September. And I don't blame him.
I don't either.
Why connect someone to this thing?
Well, he also hasn't earned it. He's had a very poor offensive season.
That's right.
Numbers are down, and you can't really justify it unless you just want to get a look. And why would you want to expose him to this?
I think I'm being optimistic by saying they can win five games.
That's not
terrific question. Need to get that answer. Don't have it for you today.
The voice of Bruce Levine. Hopefully we'll have answers to the questions at 9 o'clock this morning. Well, here's a guy that might be up with the White Sox next year. Did the White Sox lefty prospect Hagen Smith's dominating pro debut on Saturday in single-A Winston-Salem do enough to salvage the weekend for Sox fans? What'd you think of how Chris Getz didn't commit to a deliberate timetable on Saturday? This is from inside the clubhouse.
It's built up for next season, 2025. What does that look like? You know, we're mapping that out. There are, a lot of different variables that go into that. His off-season training, his health, how he's feeling, see how spring training goes and get him rolling for next year. But he's a guy that's accomplished a lot in the college game. He's got stuff that plays at the major league level right now. And now it's just putting him in a position to have success for a long time for the Chicago White Sox.
That's Chris Getz. What's your reaction to what you heard there and your reaction to what you saw from Hagen Smith?
Well, I would like to know, the White Sox, Hagen Smith joins Noah Schultz as the best 1-2 left-handed pitchers in the minor leagues. I'd just like to know what's the over-under, which guy gets traded first, and how quickly does that happen? Can Smith get up here in time next year to be traded, or do you trade him the year after that? So that would be my question to Chris Getz. Not to be cynical about it, but not holding my breath. I mean, it's great that they drafted a guy, and it's great that he's already in high A ball, high A. And he looked real good, but They got to be careful, right? They have all the innings he pitched this year. They're trying to get him some of those four inning starts, those crochet starts, and he had a good one to start with. But forgive me for kind of not getting excited about the 2 years down the road. Are they going to lose 100 games for four consecutive years, and then we'll see something happen? It's hard to follow one question with the next.
Well, that's tough. I mean, when you think about three consecutive, and now you're speculating potentially a fourth consecutive 100-loss season. That Hagen's, I mean, the highlights, kid's impressive. Like he's going to be good, but it's something I get why you would think, okay, how long until they trade him? Because they're just, acquiring early picks. Like he should be he should be the hope. He should be the guy that, White Sox fans, like, when he's in the rotation, the Sox are going to be back. They're going to finally challenge for this division again when this guy, Hagen Smith, is in there. But I don't know that what he did over the weekend would be enough if I were a Sox fan to get me through with that 100 loss. Cubs have done it many times, too. There's been many times Cubs have lost 100 games. It's hard.
Hagen Smith threw three innings, gave up no runs, two hits, struck out four, didn't walk anybody. He looked effortless, and he looked dominant. He also has an $8 million signing bonus, which makes it ridiculous to think they're going to trade him. He's going to be on the Paul Skeens track sooner rather than later. I think that's what you wonder, how quickly he'll get to the majors. And when Chris Getz says his stuff plays at the major league level now, you wonder if they have in the back of their minds a path where he could get to Chicago next year. And that's something when you have nothing else to look at the major league level in terms of hope or optimism. A guy doing what he did, who you've invested that much in already, that's a record signing bonus. Then I'm curious for his next start, wherever it is.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Given his recent surge, relatively speaking, has Luis Robert Jr. regained some of the confidence people around baseball might have lost in him? How important are the final 4 or 5 weeks here of the season for Robert's trade value?
I don't know if anybody's going to make a determination on Luis Robert Jr. based on the next 4 or 5 weeks. He's got to stay healthy. He's got to stay interested, and he's got to stay in the lineup and perform. This has been a nice little blip, but overall, I don't think this has been a good season for anybody in the South Side. And so he's damaged goods right now, and I think he's got a month left to kind of, you know, do what we don't expect him to do, and that is to finish strong, look interested, and be the all-around player that he has been in the past. He's coming off. Last year was a great year for Luis Robert Jr., and it's hard to tell based on what he has produced this season.
Well, I think it's going to be an interesting way to measure things. Like, how if he's playing well, I think he's motivated to get out of here because that's how he can get out. But if he's not, if he doesn't want to leave, he doesn't want to get traded. If he's got some roots here, if he's established and wants to be around, then you know, make yourself unavailable, hit poorly, and you'll probably be stuck here at least until the trade deadline of next season.
Yeah, they're probably going to trade him whenever they get his trade value back up, if they can get it back up. Yeah. Okay. 312-644-6767 is the number. That's three Sox questions that we went over after they lost 100 games. And we didn't even mention the chairman of the board. That's the guy that's in charge of the whole thing. So maybe we should talk about him at some point. Let's get to the extra point. It's Mully and Haw on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Colorado coach Deion Sanders banned a Denver Post columnist from asking questions of him or any other members of the football program. The columnist, Sean Keeler, can still be credentialed to cover the events, but can't ask questions. If Colorado gets away with this, will other programs try? Do you think Deion is within his rights as a head coach, or has he crossed the line?
This is a bad look for college football. It's a bad look for a guy who has benefited from the attention he created and excitement that he was responsible for last year, at the beginning of the season especially. Deion Sanders took over the Colorado job, and then, wow, there was a lot of excitement, and that was the most exciting, that was the most publicized 4-8 team in America, I think. So now when things do go awry, this is predictable, but he's banning a columnist from asking questions. And Deion, with his place in the sport and as respected and revered as he is by in some circles, you do wonder what effect this will have. I do wonder what effect it will have if it works or if they pull it off. I don't know if you are that columnist, if you would even, how you would handle that. I don't know if you would react by continuing to attend events but not ask questions and adhere to those kind of restrictions, because if you're going to ask questions, they're not going to get answered. You don't want to be a spectacle. But it's a bad look. I think it seems he makes him seem petty. He looks small. Coach Prime is not really – I don't know what he is so sensitive about. They have had favorable coverage overall. I know this is a columnist that kind of is a pebble in his shoe, perhaps. That's part of being a head coach at a big program like Colorado. So, bad look. I don't know that it will have any impact necessarily throughout the conference or throughout the league, but because I'm not sure that other coaches would go to this degree, at least maybe that's wishful thinking. There's a lot of pettiness in sports media, but I hope this isn't a trend.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to know a little bit more, but reading up on this story a little bit, I mean, the headlines are kind of, they're definitely anti-Colorado. The one that really got Deion upset was, it was asking him about Aflac, right? And Deion's a spokesperson. He has a business relate, he and the former coach of Alabama, who's now part of ESPN's crew, Nick Saban, do Aflac commercials together. It's not a great look from a media standpoint, but listen, if this columnist has questions that he wants to get answered, they are allowing him to be credentialed. They are going to allow other people from the Denver Post to ask questions, so he can get his questions asked via somebody else if it's that pressing. So it's not a great look, but I'm not going to lose any sleep over it.
Yeah, I've got to tell you, I think that, the circus week is beginning and Deion is there and they play North Dakota State or somebody to open the season. I give it about 5 weeks. And then Colorado will no longer be relevant again for the rest of the season. I don't think they're going to be in the playoff or anything like that. And I get it. It's a big story locally for them, and it's kind of a bad look. But I don't think they're any good. I don't think they have the kind of talent that they previously had. And I think that act is kind of wearing a little thin, and I would expect that you will – see them be a big story as they were at the beginning of last season, and then that will fade away quickly once the more difficult games come onto the schedule.
It's not entirely new when you have, college football coaches are kind of kings of their own castle.
Right.
And their little fiefdoms it's easy to understand how a guy like Deion Sanders, especially with his sizable ego, would think that he could control the media.
Right.
A lot of coaches have tried to do that in the past. And what stands out about this is that predominantly, the publicity that Deion Sanders has generated since coming to Colorado has been positive. Now, there are exceptions, and maybe this is one of them. The headlines have not been all flattering. But the way that he burst onto the scene was largely because of the publicity he received. They were not very good, but they received a lot more attention than maybe they deserved at first. He was thought to have changed college football last year at this time.
Yeah, but he didn't. And I don't think he's going to this year either. I think it's going to be interesting because I think that if you are a columnist, you really don't need to be able to go there and ask questions to write a column. The information is there. You can go to the news conference and listen to his answers and feel free to cherry pick whatever you want to do. I mean, whether you want to go after him or not go after him, that's still up to you. And you don't need a personal relationship with a guy in order to cover his team. I think that it's incumbent upon the paper to back up their columnist, and it's incumbent upon the columnist to remain unswayed,
no doubt,
regardless of whether you're being bullied over it or not.
No doubt.
That's very important just for the business.
It's also important because what's going on at Colorado, because of the way that Deion Sanders is, he's not the only coach doing this, but he certainly is doing it to the most extreme.
Yeah.
Treating these college players like they are professionals. I know they are all paid. But the turnover at Colorado, the way that they're using the transfer portal, the way that they are maybe saying one thing and doing another, this is a program.
He ran the whole program out when he took over. He's actually lost some players, too.
I know.
Not everybody is on board for the ride.
Not everybody's loving Coach Prime.
So, yeah, it's interesting.
You need the scrutiny. And I think you need the checks and balance that, a local columnist can provide or help provide. That's why you're right. The paper needs to back this guy, and he needs to keep showing up, Sean Keeler. And and if you don't ask questions, you can still cover the team.
No question about it. You do not need to get the answer to your question. If he doesn't want to answer your question, ask it in the paper. And you know, give the variations of what his answers were to other similar questions, and you know, say this is what we need to hear from the guy. Whatever way you want to do it, there's plenty of good ways to get that across.
Absolutely. How many big time coaches went to their athletic director, sports information director, or whatever you want to, what title is, and said, "Hey, can I do that?" After seeing Deion try. Hey, what about that guy? What about that woman? What about that guy who's a thorn in my side? Can we actually ignore them? So it's unfortunate, but it's on brand for Deion Sanders.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
Mikel Amaya at the plate. The pitch and a high fly ball, shallow right. Drifting back the second baseman, Lopez, and he makes the catch, crossing over into foul territory for out number three. Miami avoids the sweep as the Marlins beat the Cubs 7-2.
On the ground is short. This could be two. One at second. And a double play turn. And that'll be your ball game. The White Sox have lost 100 games before the start of September.
Yeah, not much went right here this afternoon. Sox got off to a nice start, then kind of disappeared. So, night game tomorrow. Long turnaround. Get your rest anyway.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. As are a baseball team, so the Cubs, you thought, there you are. You're get to 500, make the run. Make the move. They end up losing that game. I mean, listen, I don't want to get overly negative about it, but that's kind of the way they've been going all year. And now it's time, because you got a couple of, you got two series now before Yankees Dodgers, right? You still have that Yankees Dodgers connection out there. You would like them to put together. You'd like them, frankly, to win whatever number of games there are before then. And it's a really big ask because, as you mentioned, you go into Pittsburgh and they got some real good pitching.
Well, yesterday felt deflating because the day began with a little bit more hope. You had gotten back to 500 as a Cub team. Everyone always had said, well, get to 500, then we'll talk. It was time to talk. They won Saturday, the 500. They had an opportunity to gain some ground in the wild card race because the teams that lost in front of them. Now they didn't do that, and the offense was regressed and reminded you how futile this season has been offensively. 5.5 back in the wild card. They do go into Pittsburgh. Mitch Keller, Jameson Taillon tonight. They need to win, get back to 500, and do this all over again. And it's an exercise, is kind of rinse and repeat. It's the same old story with the Cubs.
312-644-6767, and the White Sox are beyond help. They're beyond the pal, if I may say, pal hose. They are beyond the pal hose. There's just nothing positive going on with the Chicago White Sox. Very little positive going on, I suppose. We mentioned that that Luis Robert is improved slightly. That's fun, I guess. I actually toyed with the idea of going yesterday and was relieved that I didn't. Let's try Kevin's in Palatine. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, guys. Cubs showed us exactly what they were this weekend. Mm. They tease you for 2 days, and then Sunday they remind you of exactly who they are. But I did have a comment, and I love the show. I listen every day. It's the best part of my morning, heading to work, but Mr. David clearly did not learn his lesson with Eloy and his multiple MVPs. Now,
Now all of a sudden, Cam, whatever his name is, or the new Sox pitcher, he's
Smitty.
Paul Skeens. Paul,
Hagen Smith.
Cam Smith is the Cubs player.
Three innings, and all of a sudden he's Paul Skeens. And David, you keep buying all this nonsense. I get that, you know, Chris Getz has his reservation on the Saturday morning show where he gets to talk about his optimism.
Yeah, it's insulting.
Where's the question next week about, hey, 2 weeks, 2 years ago, Colson Montgomery was the eighth-ranked prospect. Then he went to 22. Now in some, he's 40 or mid-50s. David, this is another guy you had as Corey Seager. I don't know what it is about the Sox that you have a need to find optimism. You got to look to the guy sitting next to you, the realist. They're losing 100 games next year. And, David, you could say Luis Robert is a top-five player and he's healthy. I dare you to say he's better than Aaron Judge, Bobby Witt, Juan Soto, Gunnar Henderson, or Francisco Lindor. Please say it on air so I can repeat it the next decade. Thanks. Have a lovely day.
Wow. Twisting a lot of things that I said over the years. Let's go one at a time. Luis Robert Jr., at the time that I said that he was among the most talented players in baseball, was beginning of the 2023 season. And it was, I think, when healthy, he was one of the top five players in baseball. He's had a terrible year. I'm not defending that comment now. It would look pretty good last year, but that was a long time ago. Kevin has a very good memory. Colson Montgomery, the comp to Corey Seager was the comp that many people made with him. He's had a very disappointing season. I think we just said that. I think it just said he wasn't worthy of coming up, and that's why he wasn't mentioned during Chris Getz's regular appointment on Inside the Clubhouse, which is rather insulting. I do think that Hagen Smith, when you reference and invoke the name Paul Skeens, it does maybe trigger people. Good. Thank you for calling, Kevin. Thank you for listening. I said he could be on the Paul Skeens track. Drafted in 1 year, a major leaguer the next. I didn't say Hagen Smith is going to start the All-Star game, but if he is on the Paul Skeens schedule, he's the White Sox version of Paul Skeens. That's why they gave him $8 million. So somebody in the White Sox organization values him to that degree, so he is that version in this organization. And does that mean that you're overly optimistic by pointing that out? I don't think so. But if you view it that way, Kevin, I'm sorry. But that is the way that I look at Hagen Smith's potential ascension to the majors.
Let's try Mike. He's in Glencoe. Hey, Mike.
Good morning, fellas. And I guess I'm glad I'm not on the same road with Kevin from Palatine. Sheesh. I'm mad, but I'm not like that. What I did want to comment, and I appreciate you guys talking so much about the Sox, is my frustration is they show no contrition whatsoever. And I actually believe that it's a formulated PR plan. There's no public recognition. There's no attempt at an apology. There's no attempt at leveling with the fans. You know, Sox fans, and I've been one since I was 10 years old in 1965, we may not be the brightest bulbs in the universe. We may be suckers, but we know bad baseball, and we're not fools. And I just feel there's been a concerted effort, Brooks Boyer notwithstanding, just to basically say, forget it. We'll normalize it. Don't pay attention to it. You'll come back to the next year and you'll resign your season tickets. You know, what's going on this week, or a lot of season ticket groups are deciding whether or not to re-sign and re-up with the Sox, even with the 10% discount. And they're asking the question, how can I afford to invest in a team when the team doesn't invest in me? And this essentially treats me like a sap. Am I wrong on there? Am I being Kevin too harsh?
Thanks, Mike.
I think that's a fair question. You can ask that because the disposable income's harder to come by than ever. And when you look at the White Sox price of a season ticket, even though it's a 10% reduction in cost, you do want to know if your team is willing to invest in its product as much as you're willing to invest in that team. That's a fair question.
I mean, how many losses are you having next year? You're now 2 years in. If you look at the trajectory of this team, they went from 500 to 100 losses to whatever this is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
125, 130?
This year?
It's crazy.
Well, this year's probably between 120 and 125, yeah. I think that's, yeah, definitely.
So next year, what does that mean?
I don't know. I think
how do you project that out is all I'm asking.
You mean for next season?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't know that it's – I don't know that you can do that right now. Based on what you see right now, I think you're not going to be wrong, and you're certainly going to be on safe ground with White Sox fans by predicting the absolute worst possible outcome for 2025. Because the cynicism is warranted, the skepticism is earned and appropriate.
But I mean, they don't have players. That's my only
point. They need to go get players. They need to go get pitchers. They need to have an offseason where they spend. So you're asking them to do something they historically haven't done, and there's no faith that they will do because Jerry Reinsdorf remains the chairman, and this is not his approach. He's not going to go out and spend wildly to get talent that is needed to avoid another 100 loss season.
He should come out and just say, well, I tell you, we're not going to get Juan Soto.
I think Juan Soto.
Whoever the big name guy is, Jerry should make a joke about it. That's it. Otani. All right. We've got Big Z next. Going to talk some football. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Look, we're not going to be in the Otani race. I'll tell you that right now. I'll give you.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Get to the extra point. It's Mully and Haw on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Colorado coach Deion Sanders banned a Denver Post columnist from asking questions of him or any other members of the football program. The columnist, Sean Keeler, can still be credentialed to cover the events, but can't ask questions. If Colorado gets away with this, will other programs try? Do you think Deion is within his rights as a head coach, or has he crossed the line?
This is a bad look for college football. It's a bad look for a guy who has benefited from the attention he created and excitement that he was responsible for last year, at the beginning of the season especially. Deion Sanders took over the Colorado job, and then, wow, there was a lot of excitement, and that was the most exciting, that was the most publicized 4-8 team in America, I think. So now when things do go awry, this is predictable, but he's banning a columnist from asking questions. And Deion, with his place in the sport and as respected and revered as he is by in some circles, you do wonder what effect this will have. I do wonder what effect it will have if it works or if they pull it off. I don't know if you are that columnist, if you would even, how you would handle that. I don't know if you would react by continuing to attend events but not ask questions and adhere to those kind of restrictions, because if you're going to ask questions, they're not going to get answered. You don't want to be a spectacle. But it's a bad look. I think it seems he makes him seem petty. He looks small. Coach Prime is not really – I don't know what he is so sensitive about. They have had favorable coverage overall. I know this is a columnist that kind of is a pebble in his shoe perhaps. That's part of being a head coach at a big program like Colorado. So bad look. I don't know that it'll have any impact necessarily throughout the conference or throughout the league, but because I'm not sure that other coaches would go to this degree, at least maybe that's wishful thinking. There's a lot of pettiness in sports media, but I hope this isn't a trend.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to know a little bit more, but reading up on this story a little bit, I mean, the headlines are kind of, they're definitely anti-Colorado. The one that really got Deion upset was, it was asking him about Aflac, right? And Deion's a spokesperson. He has a business he and the former coach of Alabama, who's now part of ESPN's crew, Nick Saban, do Aflac commercials together. It's not a great look from a media standpoint, but listen, if this columnist has questions that he wants to get answered, they are allowing him to be credentialed. They are going to allow other people from the Denver Post to ask questions, so he can get his questions asked via somebody else if it's that pressing. So it's not a great look, but I'm not going to lose any sleep over it.
Yeah, I've got to tell you, I think that, you know, the circus week is beginning and Deion is there and they play North Dakota State or somebody to open the season. I give it about 5 weeks and then Colorado will no longer be relevant again for the rest of the season. I don't think they're going to be in the playoff or anything like that. And I get it. It's a big story locally for them and it's kind of a bad look, but I don't think they're any good. I don't think they have the kind of talent that they previously had, and I think that act is kind of wearing a little thin, and I would expect that you will, you know, see them be a big story as they were at the beginning of last season, and then that will fade away quickly once the more difficult games come onto the schedule.
Yeah, it's not entirely new when you have, you know, college football coaches are kind of kings of their own castle,
right?
And their little fiefdoms it's easy to understand how a guy like Deion Sanders, especially with his sizable ego, would think that he could control the media.
Right.
A lot of coaches have tried to do that in the past, and what stands out about this is that predominantly the publicity that Deion Sanders has generated since coming to Colorado has been positive. Now, one, you know, there are exceptions, and maybe this is one of them. The headlines have not been all flattering, but the way that he burst onto the scene was largely because of the publicity he received. They were not very good, but they received a lot more attention than maybe they deserved at first. He was thought to have changed college football last year at this time.
Yeah, but he didn't, and I don't think he's going to this year either. I think it's going to be interesting because I think that if you are a columnist, you really don't need to be able to go there and ask questions to write a column. The information is there. You can go to the news conference and listen to his answers and feel free to cherry pick whatever you want to do. I mean, whether you want to go after him or not go after him, that's still up to you. And you don't need a personal relationship with a guy in order to cover his team. I think that it's incumbent upon the paper to back up their columnist, and it's incumbent upon the columnist to remain unswayed.
No doubt.
Regardless of whether you're being bullied over it or not.
No doubt.
That's very important just for the business.
It's also important because what's going on at Colorado, because of the way that Deion Sanders is, he's not the only coach doing this, but he certainly is doing it to the most extreme.
Yeah.
Treating these college players like they are professionals. I know they are all paid, but the turnover at Colorado, the way that they're using the transfer portal, the way that they are maybe saying one thing and doing another. This is a program.
He ran the whole program out when he took over. He's actually lost some players too.
I know.
Not everybody is on board for the ride.
Not everybody's loving Coach Prime.
So, yeah, it's interesting.
You need the scrutiny. And I think you need the checks and balance that a local columnist can provide or help provide. That's why you're right. The paper needs to back this guy, and he needs to keep showing up, Sean Keeler. And if you don't ask questions, you can still cover the team.
No question about it. You do not need to get the answer to your question. If he doesn't want to answer your question, ask it in the paper. And you know, give the variations of what his answers were to other similar questions and you know, say this is what we need to hear from the guy. Whatever way you want to do it, there's plenty of good ways to get that across.
Absolutely. How many big-time coaches went to their athletic director, sports information director, whatever you want to, what title is, and said, hey, can I do that? After seeing Deion try. Hey, what about that guy? What about that woman? What about that guy who's a thorn in my side? Can we actually ignore them? So it's unfortunate, but it's on brand for Deion Sanders.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Miguel Amaya at the plate, the pitch, and a high fly ball, shallow right, drifting back the second baseman Lopez, and he makes the catch, crossing over into foul territory for out number three. Miami avoids the sweep as the Marlins beat the Cubs 7-2.
The ground is short. This could be two. One at second. And a double play turn. And that'll be your ball game. The White Sox have lost 100 games before the start of September.
Yeah, not much went right here this afternoon. Sox got off to a nice start, then kind of disappeared. So, night game tomorrow. Long turnaround. Get your rest anyway.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. Those are our baseball teams, so the Cubs, you thought, there you are. You're you know, get to 500, make the run, make the move. They end up losing that game. I mean, listen, I don't want to get overly negative about it, but that's kind of the way they've been going all year. And now it's time because you got a couple of you got two series now before Yankees Dodgers, right? You still have that Yankees Dodgers connection out there. You would like them to put together. You'd like them, frankly, to win whatever number of games there are before then. And it's a really big ask because, as you mentioned, you go into Pittsburgh and they got some real good pitching.
Well, yesterday felt deflating because the day began with a little bit more hope. You had gotten back to 500 as a Cub team. Everyone always had said, well, get to 500, then we'll talk. It was time to talk. They won Saturday, yep. The 500. They had an opportunity to gain some ground in the wild card race because the teams that lost in front of them. Now, they didn't do that. And the offense was regressed and reminded you how futile this season has been offensively. 5.5 back in the wild card. They do go into Pittsburgh. Mitch Keller, Jameson Taillon tonight. They need to win. Get back to 500 and do this all over again. And it's an exercise, is kind of rinse and repeat. It's the same old story with the Cubs.
312-644-6767. And the White Sox are beyond help. They're beyond the pal, if I may say, pal hose. They are beyond the pal hose. There's just nothing positive going on with the Chicago White Sox. Very little positive going on, I suppose. We mentioned that that Luis Robert has improved slightly. That's fun, I guess. I actually toyed with the idea of going yesterday and was relieved that I didn't. Let's try Kevin's in Palatine. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, guys. Cubs showed us exactly what they were this weekend. Mm. They tease you for 2 days and then Sunday, they remind you of exactly who they are. But I did have a comment, and I love the show. I listen every day. It's the best part of my morning, heading to work. But Mr. David clearly did not learn his lesson with Eloy and his multiple MVPs. Now all of a sudden, Cam, whatever his name is, or the new Sox pitcher, he's
Smitty.
Paul Skeens.
Hagen Smith.
Cam Smith is the Cubs player.
Three innings, and all of a sudden, he's Paul Skeens. And David, you keep buying all this nonsense. I get that, you know, Chris Getz has his reservation on the Saturday morning show where he gets to talk about his optimism.
Yeah, it's insulting.
Where's the question next week about, hey, 2 weeks, 2 years ago, Colson Montgomery was the eighth-ranked prospect. Then he went to 22. Now in some, he's 40 or mid-50s. David, this is another guy you had as Corey Seager. I don't know what it is about the Sox that you have a need to find optimism. You got to look to the guy sitting next to you, the realist,
They're losing 100 games next year. And, David, you could say Luis Robert is a top five player and he's healthy. I dare you to say he's better than Aaron Judge, Bobby Witt, Juan Soto, Gunnar Henderson, or Francisco Lindor. Please say it on air so I can repeat it the next decade. Thanks. Have a lovely day.
Wow. Twisting a lot of things that I said over the years. Let's go one at a time. Luis Robert Jr., at the time that I said that he was among the most talented players in baseball, was beginning of the 2023 season. And it was, I think, when healthy, he was one of the top five players in baseball. He's had a terrible year. I'm not defending that comment now. It would look pretty good last year, but that was a long time ago. Kevin has a very good memory. Colson Montgomery, the comp to Corey Seager was the comp that many people made with him. He's had a very disappointing season. I think we just said that. I think it just said he wasn't worthy of coming up, and that's why he wasn't mentioned during Chris Getz's regular appointment on Inside the Clubhouse, which is rather insulting. I do think that Hagen Smith, when you reference and invoke the name Paul Skeens, it does maybe trigger people. Good. Thank you for calling, Kevin. Thank you for listening. I said he could be on the Paul Skeens track. Drafted in 1 year, a major leaguer the next. I didn't say Hagen Smith is going to start the All-Star game, but if he is on the Paul Skeens schedule, he's the White Sox version of Paul Skeens. That's why they gave him $8 million. So somebody in the White Sox organization values him to that degree, so he is that version in this organization. And does that mean that you're overly optimistic by pointing that out? I don't think so, but if you view it that way, Kevin, I'm sorry. But that is the way that I look at Hagen Smith's potential ascension to the majors.
Let's try Mike. He's in Glencoe. Hey, Mike.
Good morning, fellas. And I guess I'm glad I'm not on the same road with Kevin from Palatine. Jeez, I'm mad, but I'm not like that. What I did want to comment, and I appreciate you guys talking so much about the Sox, is my frustration is they show no contrition whatsoever. And I actually believe that it's a formulated PR plan. There's no public recognition. There's no attempt at an apology. There's no attempt at leveling with the fans. You know, Sox fans, and I've been one since I was 10 years old in 1965, we may not be the brightest bulbs in the universe. We may be suckers, but we know bad baseball, and we're not fools. And I just feel there's been a concerted effort, Brooks Boyer notwithstanding, just to basically say, forget it. We'll normalize it. Don't pay attention to it. You'll come back to the next year and you'll resign your season tickets. You know, what's going on this week, or a lot of season ticket groups are deciding whether or not to resign and re-up with the Sox, even with the 10% discount. And they're asking the question, how can I afford to invest in a team when the team doesn't invest in me? And this essentially treats me like a sap. Am I wrong on there? Am I being Kevin too harsh?
Thanks, Mike.
I think that's a fair question. You can ask that because the disposable income's harder to come by than ever. And when you look at the White Sox price of a season ticket, even though it's a 10% reduction in cost, you do want to know if your team is willing to invest in its product as much as you're willing to invest in that team. That's a fair question.
I mean, how many losses are you having next year? You're now 2 years in. If you look at the trajectory of this team, they went from 500, they went from playoffs to 500 to 100 losses to whatever this is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
125, 130? It's
this year?
Crazy.
Well, this year's probably between 120 and 125, yeah. I think that's, yeah, definitely.
So
next
what does that mean?
I don't know. I think
how do you project that out is all I'm asking.
You mean for next season?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't know that it's – I don't know that you can do that right now. Based on what you see right now, I think you're not going to be – wrong, and you're certainly going to be on safe ground with White Sox fans by predicting the absolute worst possible outcome for 2025, because the cynicism is warranted, the skepticism is earned and appropriate.
But I mean, they don't have players. That's my own point.
They need to go get players. They need to go get pitchers. They need to have an offseason where they spend, so you're asking them to do something they historically haven't done, and there's no faith that they will do because Jerry Reinsdorf remains the chairman, and this is not his approach. He's not going to go out and spend wildly to get talent that is needed to avoid another 100-loss season.
He should come out and just say, well, I tell you, we're not going to get Juan Soto.
I think Juan Soto...
whoever the big-name guy is, Jerry should make a joke about it. That's it. Otani. All right, we've got Big Z next. Going to talk some football. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Look, we're not going to be in the Otani race. I'll tell you that right now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at MyBob's.com to play now.